Lecture by Paulo Soleri, April 12, 1977, College of Architecture, Arizona State University.
I don't know where Bob is, but I would like to just take a moment to welcome Paulo Soleri, a person who we know well in Arizona, but certainly a renowned architect of international reputation who is known throughout the world. I just got back from New York, and they speak of you as if, you know, you're way up here on some kind of pinnacle, and you go anywhere else in the country, people know Paulo. They know the work of Arcology. They know about Pozzanti and Arcozani and all of those kinds of things. And it's our pleasure today, as part of our program, to have Paulo share his experiences, his architecture, and his arcologies with you today. And so without any further, I will just simply turn it over to Paulo, who, as you can see, is already sitting high in there.
Thank you. There are many slides, and I'm going to go fast. At the beginning, there are only some visual material. There is only they're there because they might be an opening, a visual opening to the program. So there won't be explanations, just visual impressions. In the 50s, I began to be interested in urban questions, in the late 40s. This is a diagram for some kind of a logistical network which would be based on the automobile. So an attempt to have more fluidity in the circulation within a town, let's say. In the early 60s, through a grant, I began to work on what I call the Mesa City. And the difference between the two is more inquiries in a number of things, including environmental impact. So in this case, there were many features which later on became somehow fashionable. Closing of cycles, like taking a quarry and then making a quarry, which could I get that stick in the back there? Thank you. Thank you. This is a landscape which would be the outcome of excavating and producing materials for the construction, like aggregate and other materials, and then proceeding on with the process. So instead of having some kind of a scar on this area, you make a garden out of it, a garden which has its own geology because it would be the quarrying of this material for construction. So this was a closing of a cycle of coming in, disturbing the certain balance and transforming the site. There were recycling plants suggested along the periphery of the community, of the city, and those would be the places where materials will be regenerated or transformed, like garbage, sewage, and other things, so that then you can recirculate those elements through industries or farming and so on. In this scheme, there were villages, those round things, which were somehow clustered around civic centers, and then the civic centers, the villages themselves were depending on the metropolitan system, which was made of one major network of production and consumption in terms of standard produce, and one smaller one where you had mainly home industries and crafts and marketing of them. There was a learning center here from secondary school to university, and then there was a theological center there. Water was used for transportation, for domestic purposes, and then recycling into farming. It was all hypothetical, actually, and it was designed for a climate of Arizona. This was a mesa. It was two-dimensional, basically, and eventually I decided that wasn't acceptable any longer. So I got into the arcologies. and some other colleges picked up where I left in the 50s, trying to use solar energy in connection with other activities. So this was a greenhouse, a black surface, a chimney, and the whole thing was incorporated in a structure which could have been residential or offices or whatever. In this cycle, I was working with infrareds, with winds, with water, all of them solar energy elements. Eventually, I moved away from that because there was no interest at all anywhere about solar energy in the 50s, as you can imagine. And then, about 4 years ago, when the gasoline crunch came about, I began to work again on the question of solar energy, and I ended up by having a certain notion of connecting a number of effects within one system, and you'll see that later on. In this diagram is the program of the presentation related to this idea of the sun used in a certain structure. So the ecology is the architectural and ecology notion. Two suns refers to two fundamental elements of reality. One is the sun, at least in the solar system. One is the sun as the originator of a certain condition on this earth. And the other is the mental stuff, which is the consequence of this process originating through the sun presence. So in what we are attempting to do here, we are telling ourselves that those two elements, the physical and the metaphysical, are fundamental in defining the urban context. And as a initiation to this process, we are observing a number of energies, the inorganic energy, the organic energy, and the mental energy. In the inorganic energy, we'll see the greenhouse effect, the chimney effect, what I call the apse effect. In the organic energy, we'll see the what I call the aeroponic, but it would be really the horticultural effect, production of foodstuff within a greenhouse condition. The mental energy deals with the human, the social, and the cultural. And this is what I call now the urban effect, and I will try to explain that. Before I get into this, I'm going to go through the arcologies, as we are trying to do now, an empirical example of it in Arcosanti. And then quickly some of the first sets of arcologies, as they appear in the MIT book, the arcologies, and then we'll go into the two sons arcology, which are the transformation of those sets into the ones which are taking into account more forcefully the sun through those organic, inorganic, and mental processes. I don't know how many of you have been at Arcosanti. I will not spend too much time on it. You can come and visit if you have not been there. This is the land we have, 860 acres. We are processing about 10 acres of the land to transform it into an urban condition, and we develop greenhouses on this south slope. This is the camp we set up about 8 years ago, and this is where we have been building the last 6 years and a half or so. This is on the Agua Fria River, and the construction, as probably you all know, it goes about by engaging young people, mostly students, that come for 6 weeks and they work 7 hours, 7.5 hours a day, and they help in the construction, and also they finance part of the construction by their own fees. So this is a meeting before breakfast, probably around June. Now, we match this effort and that funding with the work we do in ceramics and metal, mainly windmills. And this is the original model of Arcosanti, which has been now totally abandoned. In this model, the sun was used basically as the definer of a certain climate, and the climate was somehow defining a certain character of the building. within the building there were some facets which were referring directly to the solar energy. This is an apse, and if you expose it to the south, you have a special relationship between the sun and the apse, which makes for a good use in winter and summer. And I'll show you later the apse effect. And it shows how little we have of the amount of building that we intend to do, even though this now has been abandoned. This is a ceramics workspace. This is a foundry, two vaults where we do a number of things, including assemblage of modules, two residences with offices, and then a building here, a four-story building of the old design. So we have thus some of the elements that you see there in blue, including this building. We set up a camp using concrete to build those cubicles. Then we have an octagon, which is a larger building for meetings and for eating when the weather is bad. The building site is there. We began to cultivate some of the land to get some vegetables. We have been building this kind of foundation, basaltic rock. And this is the view from the not far from the highway about 2 years ago. In moving there, we began to use the same, some of the techniques we've been using at the foundation in Scottsdale, which means take some of the materials, local materials, and use them as a forming device. So this is silt. And the silt is, we get it from the riverbed, is packed, shaped, then painted. So this is one of the modules you see there before the pouring of the concrete, and this pattern and those colors and some of the texture is going to be incorporated in the vault. We built a second vault 2 years ago. And then we proceeded with some of the structure that we are using now. This is the ceramic space. And since it is an apse, it works as a sun collector in winter and sunshade in summer. And we do the production in this area. We use the silt as a bond breaker. And that also gives us a texture and a color, which is somehow connecting the building to the ground. They use the silt for the same purpose, the form and the shell. Silt again in making the inside of one of the houses. The forming of the foundry, the very early stage of this forming, the finish stage just before the reinforcing is put in and then the shell is poured. The foundry is slightly more complex than the ceramics because it has two stories, and the second story has some private spaces, two little apartments with two studios and two rooms. There you see the mold, the negative. Here you see the structure, which is the positive. So this is the foundry. This is where we do the foundry work proper. This is where we do assembling and storing and so on. And this is where we have the residential spaces. This is a four-story building. It has some rooms down here with services. Then there is a restaurant on two levels with the services in the north side. And then there is an exhibition space on top. Now we find out very, very soon that the buildings were interacting with the land and very, very well. So we began to have things happening at night or during the day, like sound and light shows, and you could watch from the spot, on the spot, or you can walk down and watch from the other side of the ravine. So that eventually will become a structural procedure, and we will have festivals, and in fact we have two of them already, where you have people all over the place watching, listening, and participating in a number of activities. landscaping between the restaurant and the foundry and the ceramics. The inside of the restaurant. This was on one of the 3 days of festivities last year. And we had things going on in each building, some demonstrations in crafts, music, or mimes, and so on, and then exhibition of crafts within this building. And then we set up a stage down in a ravine, and we were able to have many thousands of people watching the performance, and at night watching the performance of the on the stage, and also the performance of the what is there of the town now. A little lab building in the back of the two vaults. This is what eventually is going to be a regular amphitheater. And this is the larger amphitheater, which can take many thousands of people, up to 50, 60 or more thousand. The site is open 7 days a week. We have tour at 11 and 2, if you're interested. This is the Falco group from New York performing. And this is the swimming pool, which is now has been cast. The gunlighting has been done. And is in such a position, in such a site, as to take in the warm air coming from a greenhouse, which is going to be the main greenhouse sloping on this south slope. And the hot air will, through the chimney effect, will go through under the swimming pool, through those gates, and would exit along this cliff. The cliff itself is going to work a little like a heat sink. Now I'm going to go very fast also through the first part of the arcologies, the first generation arcology, as I call them. Which would be this, the application of some of those notions in the 60s. This was a floating system with subsystems, which would be where you harvest from the sea and you process chemical minerals or whatever foodstuff. And eventually those systems can cluster in a number of them, and then you would have an urban ribbon tying everything together. Fundamentally is the idea that whenever we go to exploit the earth, we should also try to develop a certain culture connected with this process, so that we don't go there just as technocrats, but as human beings. Those are similar ideas developed in somehow a different kind of mode. An idea for a dam which by design could be made into an habitat, so you don't have to alter very much of in the structural system of a dam. You just perforate the dam and make it make deeper blades, let's say, so that you can take care of the structural needs. But at the same time, you could come up with what you might call a full-fledged community if the dam is large enough for that. If the dam is smaller, you could come up with something smaller like a resort or a hotel or whatever. If the dam is much larger, you can develop a metropolitan center. The interesting thing is that you have water for power, for irrigation, for domestic purposes, for recreation. So you have a very specific inch, ecological inch, which could be very interesting. Those are rough models of some of the more detailed models of other ecologies. This refers to an idea for 17,000 people. This 30,000, 100 and some thousand, 200 and some thousand, less than 500,000. Those are very abstract concepts. They are trying only to suggest what could happen if you introduce the third dimension within the system. This is the Empire State Building on the same scale. And the interesting point is that there isn't so much talk about megastructures, but what we are doing is to work for the sake of mini structures, not megastructures. This would take place of a village or a town of maybe 10, 15 square miles, but this is only a quarter of a square mile, probably, with a certain depth. So you are substituting a mega system, which is Tempe, Phoenix, Los Angeles, with a mini system, which is a three-dimensional landscape. And this is very important, because it deals, again, with the difference between the gigantic and the performing. This is the interior of the 30,000. It could be a village for farmers. And the interior would be mainly commercial, public, and so on, while the exteriors would be where the private spaces would develop. This was a larger one. You could also connect yourself with the outside almost instantaneously. A few minutes, you would be out in the countryside. That suggests that life may become richer. You have less waste in trying to connect and to join or to separate yourself from other things and other people. Also, the services would become smaller because you're dealing again with a mini condition instead of a mega condition. That means that eventually even the bureaucratic machines can be cut down to size. The automobile would be stopped at the edge of the city because there are no roads within the context of the habitat, so there's no possibility for the automobile to penetrate inside of it, which means you move from the automobile scale to the human scale, the person, the legs, and so on. If the idea of the linear city was adopted, an advantage would be that by maintaining the transversal dimension within reasonable distances, like let's say 2 or 3 miles, you would then be able to very quickly connect with the main logistical network, which would be at the center. You would be able to connect with the institution of the city, the urban condition, depending on where you are within the many villages or towns or the city connected with the main logistical system, and also you would be directly able to move out of of that kind of condition and move into the open landscape. If that dimension is not respected, then you end up by having the eastern seaboard with all the troubles that it has, or the western seaboard with all the troubles that it's developing. It, continuity would demand possibly some bridging, and this is indication of suggestions of the structure bridging a river or a canyon. And last, in this series, an airport which becomes a town of about 1 million population. And this is a town of about 1.5 kilometers in diameter. It's surrounded by a green belt. Under the green belt are industries. The industries are connected with a taxiing ring, which is where the aircraft would be pulled in or pulled away from. And then they would turn on the engine and take off or landing according to the wind pattern. What you would have is that you land practically in the center of the city. You never fly above the city. And you would make the city into a place instead of being a non-place, which is what the airport is now. For this mini system, we show the distances in feet and in minutes to indicate the swiftness that you could obtain when you're dealing not with the gigantic, but with the minute. Now, I'm getting into the more difficult part of the presentation, which is to try to explain the urban effect. And I begin from the very beginning, which is I attempt to suggest a certain evolutionary process. I had to premise that I believe in evolution. So you have an evolutionary process which is, let's say, a certain point of origin, and then the development of what we call the cosmos. So this is, we tend to believe at this point that this is a deterministic condition, a deterministic way, the mass energy universe. So we have a genesis of this cosmos, the cosmogenesis, a universe of indifference. All those are relative characteristics. You can say that this cosmos is insensitive, structural, simulable, predictable, granular, statistical, rational, and entropic. Because of the presence of this genesis, of this process, somewhere, certainly in one point in the universe, we have the genesis of the life, the genetic way, the biological universe, the biogenesis. It is the universe of innocence, if you see it as a proto-human before the mind developed and the conscience developed. So it is social and cooperative, sensitized, non-simulable, selective, irreversible, evolutionary, durational, unconscious, and instinctual. This gave birth, again, at least in one place, which is the Earth, to a new kind of phenomenon, new because of the some kind of a quantum jump. And you have the cultural way, the human universe, the homogenesis. It is cultural, cooperative, social. Let's see if we can focus it. Compassionate, non-simulable, willful, irreversible, evolutionary, durational, conscious, and mental, the universe of conscience. Now, if you start to consider all those characteristics and then you refer them to the problem of the habitat, of the human habitat, you find out quite quickly how fundamental all of those items are and how differently we might look at the city once we really seriously investigate what that might mean. I extrapolate, I make a projection that if this process keeps going, eventually you have the sacramental way, the divine universe, the theogenesis. It is aesthetic, resurrectional, totalizing, loving, irreversible, non-simulable, entropic, the universe of transcendence. In this process, which can be tagged maybe 12, 15 billions of years in here, perhaps 3.5 or 4 billions of years for the biogenesis, perhaps 2 or 3 millions of years for the human genesis, you have a big question mark of what might be the next step, which would be the transformation of the whole of the universe into a divine condition. But anyhow, even if you leave that last part out, you see that in this process you begin with a relatively simple condition and you end up with a very complex condition, the human conscience. You begin with a very scattered and somehow statistical process, and you end up with a willful and very centered process. You move from ignorance to knowledge. You move from segregation to integration and so on. And that, again, this tells us something very crucial about the nature of the city. If you try to make this diagram in something slightly more dynamic and you accept the idea of the Big Bang, you could say that at the origin of the universe you have this super atom that breaks up, and it's a media, which somehow I define as pure media. And I'm suggesting that this media eventually would become pure message through a process of explosion first and implosion later. And this process would see this media transform itself into a message. It would be a reality going out as matter and coming in as spirit. Now, this is not a fantasy because this is happening under our eyes. It's been happening for about 4.5 billions of years, which is, again, this process of matter becoming something more than matter, even spirit. In trying to explain why the complex and the miniaturized are the fundamental characteristics of this process, I take the seed as a proposition, and I say if you plant the seed, you eventually see the development of a tree according to a certain genetic matrix. Well, if you could shrink this, the pace of, if you accelerate the pace of this process so that you develop in 5 minutes what might take 50 years, let's say, you would see very clearly, visually, tangibly, what's happening. And what's happening is that the cosmos gives in and furnishes elements of its own to define the organism. So it's an implosion, it's a miniaturization, it's an interiorization, it is a process of complexification that happens. You have minerals coming from the soil, and water coming from the soil, distances which are from centimeters to kilometers, and organizing themselves in very special ways to come up with the organism. And you have energy from the air in form of solar energy coming from millions of miles and coming again and working out the organism, the tree. So the tree stands as an implosive, miniaturizing, complexifying, inner motivated system, the organism. And any living system somehow partakes of those characteristics. So you move from the scattered, the simple, the undirected, into the directed, the complex, the willful, and so on. Now, instead of a tree, you can have a human being, or instead of a human being, you can have a society, and you can have a town, a village, a metropolitan system, and so on. So what is meaningful and fundamental for this organism is fundamental for any other kind of organism, including the possibility of a final organism, which would be the final seed, which would be the synopsis of everything which has ever existed anywhere, anytime, and this would be the idea of divinity, because divinity would be the trans-complex, the trans-durational, etc., etc. I don't think we have time to stay with those things. Maybe very quickly, if you have two coordinates, on one you have complexity, on the other one you have miniaturization, and you try to define that situation where life can develop within a balanced condition, then you might find out that the durational and the evolutionary stand somehow between those two, which means that if you have a tendency to miniaturize without introducing an element of complexity, you end up with the complicated. We have a congestion which somehow is suggested by some of the technocratic developments, the computer complicated. So this will represent the area where technocracy has the edge. By the same token, if you have a complexity, we tend to ignore the physical demands of life. You might end up in a condition which could be suggested by the idea of nirvana, where somehow you try to return to a condition which consumes you as an individual into this sea of nothingness, which seems to be the goal. So on one side, you have too much mind and not enough support systems. On the other side, you have too many support systems and the mind dwindles. To come down to a little closer, what those things might mean in terms of the ecology and what the ecology might do in the direction of solving the many problems that we have. I say here that the ecological commitment is indispensable for the alleviation of the ecological crisis, the redimensioning of the use of water, land, and air, the reduction of the pollution caused by technological societies, the perception of the nature of waste, affluence, a reasonable sheltering of man on his way to 6, 7, 8, 10, who knows how many billions. Resolution of the problem of energy depletion, distribution, and consumption. Resolution of the problem of segregation of people, things, and activities. Responding to the question of the gigantic, the bureaucratic, and the remote, and so on. Of all of those, one very crucial is the segregation. It's not just segregation of blood types or religious sects, or so on. It's the segregation of activities, of institutions, groups, of performances, and so on. But naturally, they are all connected with what meaning life might have ultimately if we try to fit our niche within the evolutionary process. Now, coming down to the Toussaint's ecology, as I was saying, we are trying to cluster a number of effects around the fundamental effect, which is the urban effect. And we are using the greenhouse, the horticultural effect, the apse effect, which I'll illustrate a little more later on, but you can see there what it is. If you have an apse or a truncated cone facing south, the summer sun, which is the one that you don't care very much for, will be limited in its own access to this area, which is including the structure, which is a very good area for work. In the winter, you are the opposite. The sun is able to penetrate and warm up this area. The chimney effect connected with the greenhouse effect has some important advantages to offer. And those four effects. To those four, you can add another one, which is the ability of the structure to accumulate heat and give it back when the temperature of the air becomes lower than the temperature of the structure. So that's the heat sink effect. So we have those four plus that heat sink effect, which we are trying to organize around the urban effect. And going back to the urban effect for a moment, I call the urban effect that phenomenon which is represented by a number of characteristics, and some of them are listed here. Intensity, synergy, consciousness, transcendence, frugality, sensitivity, beauty, knowledge, interdependence, coordination, compassion, cooperation, etc., etc. Those are characteristics which are embryonically appearing even at the beginning of life. So at the very first beginning, you have an urban condition. The virus is a city. It happens to be a highly organized environment phenomenon. And this phenomenon has synergy, intensity, the beginning of a consciousness, the beginning of transcendence, frugality, sensitivity, etc., etc. So whatever is true for even the early phenomenon of life is also true for the late comers, the city. Now, if you carry on this idea of evolution, you could point at a certain element of perfection, and that has been called in many ways. I use the term logos here. It could be divinity or total love or whatever, depending on your propensities. But the fundamental thing is that we are not dealing with the city as something, as a fringe action of a species, the human species. We're dealing with the urban effect as the fundamental and crucial guideline which seems to be guiding the process of the simple becoming complex, of the unconscious becoming conscious, and so on. Now, if we are able to coordinate those five effects around this effect, the urban effect, then we are saying here that you would have definitely saving on resources, on land, water, time, minerals, energy, etc., etc. We would be able to cut on pollution, segregation, waste, bigness, bureaucracies, isolation, alienation, and we would be in a better position to get into learning, into integrity, into reach, into health, into identification, cooperation, etc. And in our very small ways, with our very limited knowledge, we are trying to exactly to do this, take those five effects plus one. And this is a very elementary application of this notion. A greenhouse which is sloping along a hill, this is in India. And a greenhouse has horticultural experimentation and maybe some fish culture, aquaculture. And then at the end of this slope, which goes for the chimney effect, you might have the embryonic character of the town where you have some class work, exhibitions, meeting places, and so on. To recapitulate those five effects, you begin with a greenhouse, which is flat, horizontal. You slant the greenhouse, so you have the chimney, the ability of the greenhouse to ventilate itself. You can put a house inside of the greenhouse, or you can make the greenhouse into a dome and build facilities inside of it. I don't think it works very well, but it's done. You take a greenhouse and you make it into a sun collector. You can connect it more directly into the structure and have a little more integrity in your design. You can take both characteristics, both ability of producing food and producing heat, and you can have this diagram. You can slope the greenhouse to take advantage of the chimney effect. You can take the house and decide that since man is fundamentally a social animal, and since life, it doesn't move toward the simple, but moves toward the complex, you might want to organize the community into a fairly organized system. So, and you connect the community with the greenhouse, sloping, etc. you take the community and you introduce the notion of the apse effect, and you come up with this diagram that you'll see develop into the models. Now here, as I was saying, you had to add the ability of the structure, which is sizable, though it's not a megastructure if you compare it to what it takes place of. You accumulate energy, so this has the sink effect ability. In addition, you can have some sink effect all along the other systems. So here, it's what you have, the six effects coordinated into one-to-one system. The apse effect, to show how it works on the spot, this is an apse, the ceramics apse, in one midday in the winter, probably close to the winter solstice. This was probably around 10 or 11 in the morning. The same date, you see the sun penetrating. And then in the summer, you reverse the process. You see the shading of the floor. In fact, early in the morning, you have a shading that goes beyond the outer limit of the structure. So that's the difference between the winter and the summer condition. This is a winter shot. Now, in developing the two strands arcology, I somehow basically looked at those five effects and tried to organize them into one system. So this indicates in section a greenhouse and the main structure, which is somehow suggestive of the apse effect. And this design was augmented, this efficiency was augmented by awnings that to be used in summer. But what we ended up with was this diagram, two blades, in this case, truncated cones connected by a main garden, which is a greenhouse of many stories, and then on the south side, the apron, the energy apron, the greenhouses. So we made a little model 3 years ago, and we exposed it to the sun machine. This is March, the spring equinox. December, early in the morning, June, early in the morning. And by comparing them, we saw how well the structure responds as an apse effect to the impact of the sun, penetration of the sun. This has to be seen as shaded also, because the roof would become shaded in the summer. Later on, we got some help from the bicentennial, from the Xerox, so we were able to develop a number of models and a number of diagrams showing the sun intake, the energy accumulation, and what you might need depending on the climate or where you are, or the amount of greenhouse that you have as an auxiliary source of heat. So this is those are the greenhouses, which are producing food and energy, and they feed part of the energy in the winter to the buildings. The buildings themselves have this big greenhouse connecting the two. We developed some for specific places. This is in Chesapeake Bay, not far from Washington. There was a slope toward the south, so we developed the greenhouses, the two blades, which have been straightened in this case. And the slot faces the south, and it's the slot which would take the winter sunshine and will be very easily shaded in the summer. This was for a climate in Nevada, northern Nevada, where the slope was terraced and then covered with a membrane, and this membrane would carry on into the town, about 5,000 or 6,000 people, if I remember. If you take the cone and you straighten it, you might come up with this diagram, which somehow has the same kind of ability to respond winter and summer. This was an idea for Regina in Saskatchewan, where they have a train depot. Rail depot, which is going to be dismantled. So this acreage was given to the town for developing something, and we suggested this civic center, which would be a mix of habitat, residential spaces and offices and other things, so a small ecology. And under the main storage place, you would develop like a slope, and on the slope you would have the greenhouses. And in this case, since the climate is very rigid, 60 below in winter, constantly windy, but lots of sunshine, we thought that this approach was ideal. Another idea for a pretty cold climate where you're counting on auxiliary source of energy, like burning of timber leftovers, so that you generate heat in the greenhouses, but at the same time you take the sunshine when it comes, and you develop an outdoor which would be somehow accessible to the population all year round. So psychologically, would have been very important. The idea of a dam, which somehow as a shape, it's in a way ideal for this application if the dam is facing south. So you have the slope with the greenhouses and then the development of a structure. Those were all the sketches for those upside down sketches. This is a village that ended up by imagining in India, because we had a young architect from India, and he got very excited, you know, about developing its own village. So he made a model, and it's the same diagram, the two structures connected by the main inner garden and then the greenhouses on the south slope. A floating structure that would show again the greenhouses, lots of going on there, storage and industry perhaps, and the township with its own inner garden. And since it's floating, it would be very easy to turn it and follow the sun, synchronize with the sun cycles. We suggested introduction of a iceberg that would furnish water, fresh water for greenhouse work and for domestic purposes. It could also be a good system for refrigeration in the summer, and it could be a hell of a playground, three-dimensional playground for the town. And many years ago, in the 50s, I was working on this idea of a capsule, which has been put in an MIT book. It rotates on this axis, so you have a local gravity, you stand inside of this landscape, which is a green landscape. This was picked up by Gerald Neal and developed into the space colonies. And then I was asked to respond to his design, so I responded with a paper and also with a model. And the model is the same idea, but it's far more complex. It has seven landscapes instead of one. Each one has a slightly different gravity condition. And that's the model. And the real reason for doing this and believing that eventually we'll do it is it's a theological reason. It's, again, the notion that since we seem to be partaking in this process of making matter into spirit, and we are that exactly, eventually, this process cannot be limited to the earth, which is a tiny little splinter in a tiny little splinter of the cosmos. So eventually, we would be moving out to try to cooperate with other sources of spirit in developing the cosmos. So this would be one of the steps in going out. This idea of having urban centers in space. And in this diagram, there are many landscapes. This is the urban landscape. There's a green landscape here. There's a water landscape there. There's another landscape which is on top of the urban landscape. There is a zero gravity environment there. And this is the the quick model we made for the Xerox exhibit of Arcosanti, you see the buildings, existing buildings there. In addition, there was a building that has been designed for a conference center. And then this model was developed with more time into the model that you see now. Which is the one that now is exhibited at Macy's in San Francisco. This is the slope where we will have the greenhouses. Those are the buildings which are existing. And this is the 25-story building, which is as the characteristics of the Tucson's arcology, with a big slot facing south and a connection with the greenhouses. But what happened is that in the winter you have an updraft of energy being produced here and being fed throughout the building, including the energy that comes through there. In the summer, you would have intakes on the top greenhouse, and you would have evaporative cooling all along the building. And this evaporative cooling would cause the air to become heavier and cooler, and the air would drop by gravity throughout the building. So you have an updraft of warm air during the winter, a downdraft of cool air during the summer. Basically, that's what we are working at, which means a passive system for the whole building. This is a northeast view. We are trying to show inside, because this floor is a very fundamental one. It goes for the character of the town itself, and all the activities are going on at this level and a few more levels. But we haven't got the good photos yet. This is the end. Oh, those are showing that we need people, naturally, and we are constantly recruiting. And if we don't get people, we are in troubles. Well, maybe I go very quickly through this list, which is a little presumptuous, but I think has some truth in it. This is an actual condition that we have been developing in the last few generations, and it's the megalopoly, the flat, gigantic system, Phoenix, Los Angeles, Scottsdale, and so on. And this is the one that I think we should try to advocate eventually. So you have bigness as against smallness, exploitation as against fitness, segregation against integration, matter against mind, power, authority, destruction, conservation, pollution, entropy, asyntropy, dimness, intensity, Eden, short, post-Eden, fragmented, structured, exclusive, interiorized, complicated, complex, bureaucratic, performing, opulent, frugal, greedy, cultural, incongruous, and congruous. Now, if you have any time left, we might try to get some questions. Some information if you need it in application forms and so on. Do we have some time? Or you have some time? Hey, question? We find out it's bigger, which is good for us because it cuts down the cost per person. Whatever the cost might be. We are now working around 5,000 people.
How would electrical power be provided?
If we are staying with a passive system, we are not going to produce power ourselves, so we are to get it from public utilities, which is what we are doing now. If we try to introduce more sophisticated technology, then probably we could produce quite a bit of energy because there is lots of sunshine there. So what we are trying to do now is to see how far we can go with a passive system or semi-passive. So we might produce water hot water also. But for the moment, we're not thinking of producing energy. So we would produce the climate for the town. We would produce some of the food, a high percentage of the food, at least the vegetables, and hot water. And then the remaining would have to be gotten from public utilities. There must be some questions floating. I know one question that is in the mind of everybody, but...
Alienated in design or look, anyway.
Some of that might be true. I think the contrast in the materials in the model might accentuate that. I think that it would be a better integration between the two. Also, because what used to be the apses now are becoming crescents, so we are still keeping those two large crescent-like structures. They're going to be two stories, and they're going to be residential. But in a sense, a certain indication of a progress or time schedule might not be bad. That always happens anyhow.
Since I've been up there last year, put in the swimming pool, how long will it be, or what's your scheduling as far as having the greenhouse to help heat it and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Well, we would like to have the swimming pool by August, but we don't know if we can afford it. So we are now trying to define enough deck so we can use the swimming pool. If you don't have a deck, you cannot use it. So now we have the structure, we have to plaster the structure, and we have to put equipment and put the deck. The greenhouse, we hope to design it this year, and we don't know if we can start it this year.
The river that flows through that
way,
which river is it?
The Agua Fria River.
How, what's the capacity of that river?
Well, 5 gallons an hour. It's about this size. I don't know, it's many hundred gallons a minute, but it's a little stream, the one you see, the underground stream, it's probably much larger. We got 125 gallons a minute in our well. We tested the well about 2 weeks ago. No, it depends how much help we're going to get. That's about it. The bells, the royalties from the books, my lecturing, and some private help, but very minimal. Very minimal. And then some grants, like for the festivals, we get some money from the endowments of the arts. We're trying to get a little more of that, but nothing to construct anything really. The cafe is, it's opening Wednesday, next Wednesday. Do you believe it? There's a menu which is a little more ambitious than what we were thinking of. It's fairly good, and I think the food is going to be quite good. We're keeping track of the people that have been working in the place because they'll have some kind of a precedence. Well, we have a number of inquiry from people that they have not been working there, but then we know that there is a number of people that have been working there that would like to be able to get in, possibly. It depends how long it's going to take and how many people are going to be interested in it. For the moment, we are trying to see other possibilities like a cooperative or something which keeps the real estate within the town, whatever the political and economic setup is going to be, not individual. But that could change, I don't know. So you would be renting or leasing more than buying. Well, conscience for one. Well, it depends so much on how things are going to go. If things are going to go the same way they're going now, then conscience is going to be an imperative. In fact, it might go beyond that. There might be a paralysis. Now we are naturally we are trying to put the accent on building, but we have already a number of activities like the ceramics, the foundry, the restaurant, the visitor center, the garden. Well, eventually, what we'd like to go on with would be a greater effort in urban problems, and that could be seen as a school or as a research center or whatever. The other is to see how the food cycle is organized and maybe redirected, so we would be producing food and then processing food and consuming food, and that would take quite a number of people involved because it can become a very successful, very income-producing process.